I digress again, but did you listen to the album, Wale's album with Seinfeld?
Yes, that cemented Wale in my heart, basically.
Welcome, 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 everyone, to Show Versus Business, your weekly table on pop culture, too, a very different perspective. I'm the host, Theo, and on the line, I have this man himself, Mr. Bitches.
What's up, man? What's up?
Hey, man, I'm so hyped, brother, as always. It's good to talk. So, hey, everyone, we have a hot, hot topic list today. One of these we're talking about, digging in the crates this week, is going to be comedy specials. It's going to be interesting as we talk a little bit about our history of comedy, movies, as well as TV shows or TV specials. But really, this is driven by a new section that we'll discuss. Dave Chappelle is a controversy right now.
Oh,
no, he didn't. And then we'll talk a dig into the future this week, a little bit about the never-ending storytelling and it's killing entertainment in general. And then finally, we'll do our SVB thoughts, a new section that we're going to kind of go into. Will be some spoilers here, so we'll give you spoiler warnings, but we're going to, you know, discuss a little bit about Squid Games, which is still a hot phenomenon, and the What If finale. So, Mr. Bidja, how was your week?
Week was good, man. Week was good. Just getting into the vibe of loving everything that I do and everything that's going on. Like Snoop Dogg said, you know, at the end of this, I just want to thank me. I'd like to thank myself. I'd like to recognize myself for, no, I'm just happy about the way things are progressing and learning to love life a little more.
I love it, man. That's good, man. That's good, man. I'm out here, man, these streets, man, looking for this money, man, from these VCs, man. So, definitely interesting time for me, my business. Kind of like I have a business that's doing well. VCs is like, well, you know. I don't know. So I just like, dude, whatever. So it's a sales game, and it's a game of, you know, it's basically, you definitely got to act like you, you know, you really got to puff yourself up, really be in the mix, right, with this game. So it's definitely, I got to turn that side of me up again, you know, mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, I have that side of me, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just got to turn it up. And sometimes, you know, I've been so heads down trying to make this business success. So now I got to turn it to the, hey.
So do you have to overcommit and overdeliver?
Exactly.
Like your boy Cardone says?
Exactly. It just, I got 3 meetings a day, so you go fit my schedule or what? I mean, look, you got to make a decision. What you going to do? So it's going to be interesting. So I keep you posted as that, this progress. But it's kind of interesting learning a lot, just talking to different people and just, you know, get myself out there more. It is, It's kind of like one of those skill sets. If you kind of understand how to do it, then, you know, you can always leverage it for the rest of your life. Because number one, if you did it well the first time and, you know, you built your business up and you successful exit, then you know, you got investors in your back pocket for the rest of your life, right? Hey, I got an idea. I want to sell orange t-shirts, right? To, you know, millennials. Okay. Here's $2 million. And so if you do it successful, you got that. And then, you, yeah, then you, and there's a skill set. So you know how to do it. So I'm encouraged, you know, it's a new kind of skill set because, you know, but once you understand how to do it, you know, then just move on to the next thing. So anyway, so that's what I've been kind of focused on. But So as we get into it, let's talk a little bit about, I think one of the things we want to discuss, and this kind of segues into some of our stories for this week. I think one of the things we talked about was just comedy specials, Mr. Bidja, you know, growing up. This is our Digging the Crate section, for those who want to know. Growing up, I think you and I saw a lot of comedy specials. I saw some live. I'm sure you did. Some comedy specials we participated in. So, Mr. Bidja, so let's go back in time or even current times. What are some of the best comedy specials you remember just growing up?
Growing up, I think I liked comedy in general. Really got a kick out of just the different comedians and the way they approached life. But I had an old record. My parents had an old record of Bill Cosby. And listening to him on stage was just, I, hearing the audio is different from watching someone on stage. And I realized that, wow, I could just listen to someone talk. And maybe that's why I'm doing podcasts now, because of that whole listening to audio started with my dad. And, you know, he had some old records of just a lot of comedians. And yeah, it got me put on a whole different game. Even early Seinfeld stuff was like, just, it was good. Then got me thinking about audio.
Man, you must have read my notes, man, because I said the same exact thing. That's kind of got me into it. My grandfather had old, you know, I know Cosby's canceled now, but look, he was a genius at his craft. And he has some old Cosby records. And I didn't know this, but he, as with the Fat Albert what do they call it? The Cosby Kids or whatever they were called. But yeah, that's where they all came from. And he would do the voices. And I was like, oh, wow. He really is.
Yeah.
And so that was his, just him growing up, right? In Philadelphia and stuff. And so, and just amazing. He was just a really good storyteller. You just listen for days. Just like, man, if I could just tell a story like that, just enthrall people, just sound my voice, that'd be awesome. So like you also, drawn to the voice.
Would you happen to remember, let's see how well the skit may have stuck, if you remember it. Do you happen to remember the Cosby story about, he was just telling a story about stupid kid games, and there was the one where Ruckabuck or something like that, or where one kid would like squat down on his knees and other kid would jump on him, and then you'd have like five or six kids trying to jump on this one person to see how many kids he could hold before he fell over. And then they couldn't beat this one kid, so they got like the fat guy from down the street that nobody liked, but they called on him for this game. And he came running around the corner, and the kid at the bottom was trying to get away, like, no, man, y'all let me go, let go, get off, get off. And the big kid jumped on the top of the whole pile, and everybody got hurt. It was.
I do remember, I don't know if you remember, right before the Cosby Show, TV show came out, he did a stand-up special, and that kind of, it was like called Bill Cosby Himself. Man, I'm just off the dome right now. And he was sitting in a chair, remember, just talking. And a lot of that special became actually the TV show. I don't know if you remember, some of the stuff he talked about came up in the TV show. So it was kind of interesting how that kind of translated. So he was kind of one of the first big, I mean, they've always did. I think they did it back in the day with Flip Wilson and some other comedians back in the day. But he was like the big one that kind of translated from stand-up into TV shows. But, you know, they've been doing that for decades. So, digress. But
speaking of which, Seinfeld, he turned his whole comedy act into a show. That was literally what the whole thing was about, a show about nothing. His comedy act was basically about nothing very important. So.
I digress again, but did you listen to the album, Wale's album with Seinfeld?
Yes, that cemented Wale in my heart, basically.
So did Seinfeld actually sit down with him? Did that happen?
Yeah, it was called The Mixtape About Nothing. Okay. And Wale got, first he got What's-Her-Face on, Julia. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, right? Yeah, he got her on in like a skit because he was talking about Seinfeld. And in one of the skits, she calls him on the phone. He's like, hey, Wale, listen, I know you were in there with the boomty boot beats and all that, but I need you to give a little coolness to it. And he's like, I'm not cool. I'm like, no, just listen, hear me out. And they had this whole skit. And I was like, interesting. And then the next one, Seinfeld came on and they really did it big. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that matrimony one too. When he's talking about, marriage is like, being on a roller coaster. And so that skit at the beginning. And that matrimony song, if you remember that song. But anyway, once again, we digress. But that's awesome, man. Hip hop and comedy, man, coming together, man, as, forming a unique Voltron, if you will. So
it's kind of bizarre. It's kind of a bizarre mix. It still works.
Especially like a Jewish kind of comedy with, black rapper. It's just like weird, but it did work. So good for him, man. But anyway, we digress again. So some of the things, I want to talk about Chris Rock, man. That submitted me. I don't know if you remember. I mean, I think that was classic, Bring the Pain. And, the bit from there was just, He said, I love black people, but I hate niggas. It was so funny because it was somewhat true. It still kind of is. You just basically people just, performing or doing something a certain way from a society standpoint. That was his point. But it was just hilarious the way he kind of put it. And so that's where that came from, that Bring the Pain Chris Rock set.
Yeah, totally. That was a great one. And it's a bit about making ammunition cost a lot so people will stop shooting.
I still think of that.
Yeah, there was a ton of.
I still think of that idea every day. The bullets, you should make the bullets more expensive. So then people wouldn't be shooting each other. I mean, stuff like that was just common sense. And you could tell, because you remember back in the day when he first came out with comedy, he was okay. He wasn't the greatest. But for some reason, he just grinded it out, man, and became like really great at it. And he was like, he had the comedy belt, man, for a long time after that.
Pretty much. I also don't want to forget Richard Pryor. He was one of the, I think he was one of the first comedians that really hit me with the pain aspect of being a comedian and how you could laugh at your pain. Because he talked about an episode where his dad was beating him, basically. And it was just funny how, he was talking about seeing his dad and like the lights going down and like the spotlight on his dad. He's like, okay, here it comes. Let me get ready. And it was just like this horrible situation. But when you're watching it, you're not thinking horrible. You're just thinking, my God, this is funny. There are bits to this I can relate to. How does a kid see this? Like, what I can really do is as his hand comes, I can jump into it to kind of soften the blow. And if I hold on to his hand, then he'll be swinging me around instead of smacking me with it. Yeah, that'll work a lot better. And just explaining this, and I'm like, okay, this is terrible, but I'm cracking up. And that's what comedy was. It's great to me because of stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into, can comedy still do that, right? Get into these controversial topics and still, skate through. So that's kind of interesting. But you're right. I mean, Richard Pryor, I mean, he's classic. I mean, I didn't think of him right away because, I kind of got to Richard Pryor later, but because all the great comedians were saying, go listen to Richard Pryor. But, the freebasing cocaine, right? Just talking about how he murked himself and how that experience. I mean, dude, to relive that in a comedy special, that was classic, man. And I mean, so he's definitely goes out as one of the greats, man. And so, and not to make this all a black comedian podcast, but I always think of George Carlin. He did the 7 words you can't say on TV. I thought that was the most cleverest thing ever. shit, fuck this. And he just like how he put it all together. He said, you can say this, but you can't say that. And so he was definitely up there with one of the greats when it comes to just being able to communicate an idea. And he said some great things about, he was very populist kind of guy, right? And just, talking high level about religion. So he was really thinking on another level. And so I thought that was pretty good.
You ever see any acts live?
Yeah, man. I mean, I wasn't going to get into it, but let's start the first one. So I saw the Kings of Comedy. I don't know if you remember.
Okay.
Yeah, Kings of Comedy was a big, big hit. Matter of fact, on our notes, I think I put the stand-up comedian performances. Kings of Comedy, I think on this list here, it is number two behind the great Eddie Murphy as far as like box office performance. And man, Kings of Comedy, man, that was, for those that don't know, that was Steve Harvey. Let's see. Man, why am I drawing a blank? Cedric Entertainer. What's his name?
D.L. Hughley.
D.L. Hughley. Comic View days. Remember him? Oh,
yeah.
We've known him a long time. He's a political now, but before he was political, he was out here talking about people in the crowd, BET Comic View. And of course, the great, late great Bernie Mac. And I just remember seeing that. And when Bernie Mac does this set about, you remember the bit about, the bus driver and the kid who stutters.
Oh, I don't remember it, but I know what you're talking about.
It's the funniest thing for her, man. I was there with my mother-in-law for some reason and North Carolina watching this. And I was literally peeing in my pants, man. It was so funny, man. That bit, man. I was like, oh my God. I was like, dude, because it's so wrong to laugh. because basically he's making fun of someone that stutter. But the way he did it every time was just, I mean, I definitely am not going to do this podcast, but it was hilarious. So go check it out. The Kings of Comedy, the bit about the bus driver and the stuttering kid, hilarious. Yeah. So he was great.
So, yeah. That was good stuff. And like you said, a lot with Comic View, I got into Comic View at some point, like most people, most black people in the 80s, 90s. It came on like right at the prime time. When if you didn't want to watch the news, you watched Comic View. So it was just on. People were having fun about it. And Earthquake really got me laughing. Just this big dude with kind of a slow delivery that a lot of stuff that he said just made sense. Like, hey, man, you got a big head. And he would just go off on this thing. And you're like, yo, why is this dude funny? And, you know, would just be dropping all kinds of angles and analogies on some really simple stuff. But I was in Minneapolis one summer and I heard he was going to be performing. So I was there with John Mile and we were like, hey, let's go see Earthquake. And yeah, man, dude came on stage just straight drunk. And he was sipping on Hennessy or something. And at the time I was a little more of a Puritan spirit. I was like, why is he on stage drunk? This isn't right, you know? And I hope he gives a good performance. I might ask for my money back. I wouldn't.
Same with you. Yeah. Earthquake.
I know, right? So I got online with, in the crowd with them. And I was like, wow, this crowd is kind of intense. You know, the crowd was getting like a little tipsy too, because you got the bars and everybody's talking. It's like a club going into one of these things, right? Everybody's dressed up and talking and whatever. Man, he comes out on stage tipsy, brings out a bar stool and puts it in the middle of the stage and puts his drink on it. And they're playing Tupac and he's just kind of bobbing his head to the music. Get this sweet time just putting up this drink, his glass, and undo it, you know, with the bottle and everything and the mic. And everybody's just vibing to Tupac. And all of a sudden, one dude starts yelling, like, you know, come on, dog, quit playing around. And, you know, Earthquake just kind of looks up at him and, you know, keeps going. And after they turn the music off, he's like, oh, man, good thing that music drowned out that motherfucker in the back row, you know. who was it? And everybody points at this one guy. And I swear he spent 45 minutes out of a 50-minute set just going in on this dude.
Oh, my goodness.
One of the funniest times of my life, dog. I was like, he just won't let this guy go. I'm sure he has other stuff to say, but I don't care.
Oh, man. That I mean, you know, a comedian. And it's like the thing I was thinking about this earlier this today, because I knew we were going to talk about this topic. It's such a unique art form because they get instant feedback, right? You know, whatever they say, they know if it's working or not. And you got to think it's a craft too. So they're always perfecting it. So they know exactly, what material is going to hit. But then when they get a crowd and they know this, I got this crowd in the palm of my hands, then that's when the magic happens. And I experienced that twice in a live set. So I experienced that with Sinbad of all people.
Sinbad's good. Sinbad. He's good live.
He was awesome. I mean, I was in Vegas, you know, probably everybody was drinking and having a good time anyway. So it was a good crowd. But man, he was so good that he was just like, hey, okay. He knew he had us. So he was just like, hey, just throw something out. Someone said ghost. He said a funny bit about ghosts. We all, he said, don't give me something else. Kids. Okay. Let me tell you this. It was like, he threw anything at him. I'd never seen that before. You could just throw anything at him and he would just make it funny. And I was like, dude, yeah. That. And so to me, I don't care what people say, to me, he's up there. And then, of course, the great Dave Chappelle. I had an opportunity to see him live one time in Atlanta.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, man. And, dude, I don't remember what he was talking about, but all I remember, he came out on stage, and I'm literally, I mean, once again, this is the pee in my pants scenario. And I was sitting next to my friend. I said, what's he talking about? And we both said, I don't know. But it's so funny. I'm just like one of those where it's like, I can't comprehend, but everything is coming out of his mouth. It's just, I can't stop laughing. And it was just like, I mean, I've never been that uncontrollable. It's just like, My stomach hurt. I mean, you know that whole, like, you're just laughing so hard, you can't stop. Man, he's a master, man. I mean, you know, we'll talk a little bit about him later, but Dave Chappelle, man. I mean, you know, he's been doing it. He's a prodigy. He did it when he was young. I mean, he did his master's craft. He went through some hardship, and he's back. And so I say, not a great form, but he's back still doing it. And, you know, some are considering him the GOAT because of what he could do. So, that goes up there, man, for me, my book.
All right.
Did you have, so I think you mentioned, you know, you tried your hand at stand-up comedy back in the day.
So, yeah, man, we both had a mutual friend and roommate, John Mile. Great guy, solid individual. And he was into comedy. So I was into comedy more as a spectator, like most people. But he was in this role of actually going out and doing comedy. So I started following him around to comedy acts, to little events. And I got in it with him and started hosting. Like, I would just go up, "Hey, everybody, glad to have you here. Da, da, da. We got some people coming up. This is that and that." And that was just my little intro into it. Because I was thinking to myself, hey, this is fun. I'm practicing my public speaking, learning how to convey a message, to hold a crowd's attention, et cetera. And at one point, I learned about open mics, where you could come to a comedy club and do your act for a short period of time. And John was like, "I'm signing up." And in the back of my head, I was almost offended, like, "Hey, man, I'm funnier than John." And he's going to do this and try to outshine me? Nah. So I went up a couple times, and this is in Minneapolis. I spent a couple summers up there doing internships with a couple places. And I actually met Nick Swardson, the Barks Root Beer guy. He's been on Reno 911, done a few comedy specials. I actually met that guy and started getting into the weirdness of the actual comedy scene and understanding a little bit about how comedy is constructed, the purity of the art form. Like, as you said, it's the only art form where you really are there, but the art is with you and the audience right at that moment. You know,
and you never know what you're going to get. And that's why it'd be great. You could bomb. It could be the greatest ever to still bomb, but, you know, just don't know it. Likewise. So I never did it. That's kind of like on my bucket list. So I was this close to sign up at open mic here in Tampa when I first moved down here. So
yeah.
I'm going to do it one day. You know, now it's like, dude, you know, we're going to talk about having kids, you know, can't do shit. And talk about what you live, right? So anyway, I digress.
Comedy is the truth.
It is, man. So, you know, I think I would try. I would try it, you know, definitely do it. But I remember, in L.A., I did the same thing. And a buddy of mine, his friend was into comedy. He did, like, you know, kind of open mic sets. And that's how I kind of hanging with him. I never got a chance to do it because I was only there for a summer or two in L.A. But that I got the chance to meet King Jong before he was big time, you know.
Okay.
The comedian, you know, and he does The Masked Singer now, but he came from Hangover, Community, all that. And he would say, "Hey, I'm a doctor and I'm doing this on the side." And he was funny. And I was like, and that was before he was this big guy. It was funny. He's just right there, just a regular dude, right? And he was doing this thing. I was like, man, this is amazing, man. So, you know, he's a doctor, man, doing this thing. So, so that was kind of cool, man. But yeah, like I said, all power to them, man. I think comedians, man, they make the world better, man. There would be a period of time I can remember just staying up late and just watch. Sometimes I go on these comedy binges. I don't know about you, but like, not too long ago, Netflix, I started, they got all these comedy specials. I started going through a bunch of comedy specials around when I'd be driving or something and just listening to them and just having a good time laughing. Or when I was younger, I would stay up late and they had like a 30-minute comedy set that you could listen to. So I thought those were hilarious. So, but anyway, man, it's just, you know, anyway, this it's funny. It's kind of making a smile thinking about comedy. So I guess it's a good thing.
Yeah. Smile, laugh more, and not be lame.
Well, with that said, let's get into the news. So speaking of comedy, Dave Chappelle just recently launched a Netflix special. And I think, you know, people are trying to get canceled. And Dave still remains defiant for this. So high level. So there was a special he released on Netflix this week, actually. And basically, as he has with all his other previous Netflix specials, he talked a lot about the, gay and lesbian community, and more specifically, the trans community, right? And in this special, he wanted to kind of double down, triple down, quadruple down on this conversation for whatever reason. And so, he said some things that people took to heart, right? And now there was, you saw the special, is that correct, Mr. Bidger?
I saw the closer. Yes.
So, high level, was it funny? Did you like it?
It was funny. And I think in a message I sent you, I thought it was a bit undercooked. And I didn't even mean to use that word, but it was a bit raw, you know, and it's intentionally so, which was really bizarre to me, where it's like he's pulling back a little bit of the glitz and glamour and ha-ha sugarcoating of comedy, and he was giving you something a little raw. So I kind of had a, like, well, he should have been trying to be a little funnier, ha-ha funnier. But I respect what he did as a comedian going out there and doing his thing and putting his message out there. So, yeah, I did laugh at moments, definitely. But yeah, that's my overall feelings on it.
So, I mean, he's been doing this. I can't remember. I'm looking at his specials now. I think it was the Bird Revelation. I got to look at it again. But there was one that's really raw. Remember, he just sat in the audience smoking a cigarette. And he was just talking to this lady back and forth. That was the Netflix special. And then obviously the YouTube one he did, 8:46. Right after George Floyd.
Forgot about that.
That was very raw. I mean, it was just like, I don't think it was even funny. It was just him just talking about his feelings. And so those are kind of, in that vein of just rawness, right? Not really polished, not really, comedian, I think.
Not trying to be humorous. I'd like to make that distinction between being funny. I mean, if you say he's not funny, that kind of sounds like he was bad at his job.
Yeah.
But he wasn't trying to be humorous.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Definitely. I agree. And so I think that's kind of where he was at. And so anyway, high level, I liked it. I mean, I thought it was funny. He did say he said some way worse stuff than what he said that. I mean, that joke about the priest, the preacher, I thought that was kind of out there. Out of nowhere. But, this not getting a lot of play. And he talked a lot about the Jews for some reason. But, he's a comedian, he's going to push the envelope, right? And so, but this is the thing, that's gotten him into a lot of hot water because of what he said on previous, special, especially in this Netflix era, he's getting a lot of flack for going after the trans community. So,
did it make you uncomfortable?
No, I mean, honestly, did not. I mean, I felt that he's a comedian. That's what he does. I mean, I've listened to some CK, Louis CK stuff. I mean, he says some crazy stuff, but he made it funny. He talked about pedophilia. He talked about killing people. And it was just like, it was funny though. So to me, I don't think that's what the community is supposed to do. That's what artists are supposed to do, right? You're supposed to walk up to that line and see where that line is and go as far as you can, right? And as long as it's within your art, that's fine. I mean, I don't know. We get to censorship if we, say you can't say that stuff because it offends people. I mean, it's an art form, right? I mean, I can't go into an art gallery and say this painting offends me. Take it down. No, just don't come into the art gallery, right? And so, it's kind of like, or this song offends me, right? Just don't listen to the song. I don't know. You tell me. I mean, as an artist, as you can see, I'm just taking it in with, there's some things I would never watch, right? Because I know that's just not who I am and that doesn't gel with me. But I'm not going to go pick it and say, hey, you can go to hell because of what you said or you need to be canceled. That's not my place.
Right. I think there are some comedians that do a bad job at getting their ideas across or they're trying to, like Ari Shaffir. Said some things that I was like, okay, I don't think that he's being I don't think he's being very good at this humor thing that he's trying. It's just landing flat. But then maybe that's me, right? Because he said some things after Kobe Bryant died, you know, and it was like, well, L.A. and one less black man or something, you know, to, and if he put it in a comedic video. And when I saw it, I was kind of like, well, this just looks like, you know, you're slamming him. But then he had previous videos like that. So, you know, it's like, whatever. I don't really rock with dude like that. Maybe he was trying to get some point across. But I think, you know, as you get to like the George Carlins and the just the high-end comedians like Chris Rock, they are used to playing in this area that's very, I don't want to say acceptable, but you're touching a lot of different people and everyone's kind of like, yeah, it was funny. I was into it. I don't know why exactly it's making me think and whatever. And like we said earlier, Chappelle was pulling back a little of that coding and being like, here is the raw and here where certain feelings come from. Here is this and that. So, I mean, like, I don't want to try to break it down in this time we have, but it was intentional and it actually did make me a little yeek at some points, but you know,
shouldn't art do that though? In some ways make you think, or Ricky Phil, did he cross a line? let's contrast.
Okay.
Let's contrast it to Kevin Hart. I mean, so I love Kevin Hart. Some of his comedy is very funny, but I'll be honest with you, I don't think he has anything interesting to say. And so
I agree with it.
And so it's kind of like, you know, he can be funny. He has his moments, but like, I'm not rushing to go see his comedy special anymore. Right. You know, especially after the last one. Yeah. love it. I just think that you know, it's like after some comedians, man, they just don't evolve, or they can't evolve, they won't, you know. Someone made a good point by Dave Chappelle. He's been through hell, because you remember he got literally canceled before cancel was a thing, when he gave up that $50 million Comedy Central money for the Chappelle show. And it called him crazy. They say he went to Africa. He lost his damn mind. And he didn't really have another special. I was looking at this before. He did his first special was in 2000, Killing Them Softly. He did one in 2004. And he didn't have another special on Netflix until 2017. Hmm. So, dude, that was literally like, what, 12 years ago? Like,
yeah,
13 years ago? And so it's like, you know, so I say that to say that, you know, I think he's been through the fire. He said, hey, I gave up $50 million and I got it all back. So I can say what I want. I'm not scared of, you know, the consequences anymore, right? You know, and he doesn't even live in Hollywood either. He's also out, you know, out there in Ohio. And this is all he does. He doesn't do TV shows, movies anymore. He did some movies. He did some TV shows back in the day. But he doesn't even do that anymore. So it's kind of like, you know, I think he's free to kind of do what he wants. And to me, that's refreshing.
Exactly. And I think that you have to really stop and understand what he was trying to do when you're looking at it. When he was first starting out, it was like all his humor was directed at the black audience. And he has this ability to kind of get people to, he had this ability to see things from, you know, not, I don't want to say oppressed, but he had this ability to see things from a point of view, you know, where, hey, you got hurt by this, it's funny. And he would do that for black audiences and for black people. And when he started doing the Chappelle show, we started seeing different angles of that. And it's like, as long as he was talking about the black issues, nobody's feathers were getting ruffled. But then he started expanding it a little bit, and he was like, with the $50 million thing with Comedy Central, he was like, well, I got to a point where I realized they were laughing at me instead of with me. Let me see if we can move this this spotlight around just a little bit and start seeing how other people take this comedy. And when he started doing that, that's when he started getting called edgy and, you know, all that. So now we're up to this point where, you know, it's him talking about his relationship with an opening act that was a transgender woman and how that worked out. And it's like, yeah, the spotlight is almost not on me at all because I don't relate to this group in the way that most comedy does, with self-deprecating humor, et cetera. So, yeah, it's, as you said, he's evolving his own craft without worrying about being canceled, without worrying about consequence from, you know, a TV network. What did he say? Fuck ABC, fuck Twitter, F all y'all. And it was just like, okay.
And then the article you sent me basically made with the great lifts to show you the Hollywood people that were in attendance, even when he said all that, right? So,
yeah.
And so many words say they co-sign on what he's saying. And so, like they said, Brad Pitt was there with the Zella party and Leonardo DiCaprio was there. So, you know, I'm sure their publicists don't want to hear that because now, oh, Brad Pitt transphobic, yeah, or is Leonardo DiCaprio not like trans people? So, but, you know, but he's beloved. I mean, you know, I mean, at the end of the special, you remember he had all those pictures of all these celebrity friends that he's met through the years. And so, I mean, you know, he's built a bag of friends and deservedly, right? I mean, he's played his dues over the last 25, 30 years. So I get that part. But, you know, and Hollywood as a family is a relationship business. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, they're not going to cancel him, man. I mean, you know, I mean, and this is all he does. It'd be different if his money was tied into other stuff. And he's widely focused on this. He doesn't have an apparel company. He's not trying to get in a rap. We say that because the news is coming out that The Rock is trying to be it, getting into some rapping or something like that. So that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
But he does have movies. So it's kind of like, gives him the freedom, man. Right? Because if you were tied into all this other stuff, I guarantee people, he wouldn't be saying this stuff.
Yeah.
Hell, we got back in the day, he was in You Got Mail, remember, with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. So that'll get as much sold out as you can back in the day. So he was selling out too back in the day.
Hi, we got a letter from America Online. They just have some suggestions for the script that'll work better with their brand. So if you could just take a look at them, we've written some notes in the side. We think they'll work, okay? Okay, thanks, bye. You know,
and he played ball, man. He played ball back then. Yeah. So don't let him fool you, man. He sold out. He did all that. But then got to a point where, you know, he said, enough is enough. God damn it, as he would say, enough is enough. So anyway, Dave Chappelle, man, on one hand, you know, I wish he wasn't as defiant about this because at the end of the day, I mean, I agree. I mean, you know, I don't think he wants to be malicious to it, but it comes off as malicious and you should know that. And so, you know, there are people hurting out there and I think he's trying to show nuance, but it does still come off as insensitive and I think that's what it. But at the same time, people just need to be stopped being so sensitive, man. It's a comedian, you know, and it's like, dude, I mean, I know he said things like, you know, team turf, you know, it's never good when you agree with J.K. Rowling right now. It's like, why would you do that, man?
That's one of those sound bites where if you just take that one little piece out, it's like, why would you say that in the context of the whole? Because, you know, you could go back to any comedian. It's like, Patrice O'Neill would talk about, you know, his issues with women, trying to think of other just terrible examples. It's much more nuanced, obviously, than what's his name, Eddie Murphy was doing back in the day.
Oh,
for which Eddie Murphy apologized for.
Yeah,
you know, where he was actually making fun of, and you know, he apologized for that profusely, and everybody's like, cool, man, we get it. Not everybody, but the general populace just like that. So
Kevin Hart got canceled from doing the Oscars because some tweets he did years before, and he was very, you know, so it's kind of like,
you got to stand up for that stuff, man. I mean, you can't just, because once you buckle, then you're done. That's why Louis C.K. is gone right now.
Exactly. Because there's a term, buck breaking, right, that's going around about, you know, unfortunately, our black entertainers, you know, having to, you know, kowtow and apologize. And I think that's what happened to, you know, not to invoke his name, the name that should not be said, but the baby that Dave Chappelle talked about. You know, he's basically been canceled because of what he said, some very inflammatory. Chappelle even said, y'all know I go hard in the paint, but man, when he said that stuff, I think it was about to get killed. yeah, the baby, man. So I think, you know, he was trying to, he apologized. He did apologize because I think he was getting conflicting messages about like how to handle this. And that's a challenge, man. You know, when you're beholden to all these people, man, you don't know, you know, who you are. You know, you're going to go back and forth. And so, you know, we both never been at that level, but I'm assuming. Or look at Nick Cannon. I thought Nick Cannon got done up. He said some derogatory stuff around the Jewish community on his podcast, thought he was big and bad. Next thing you know, I'm sorry, Mr. Viacom, and what do you want me to say?
Yeah, Nick Cannon even had a sit down with one of the major influencers in the Jewish community. Like, well, let me school you, young Mr. Cannon. And it's like, wow, okay.
So, I mean, I get it. I don't know, man. It's just like, maybe because we're older a little bit, you know, not trying to be canceled or anything here, but, you know, I do feel there is this bigger, we worry about the things that don't matter. They don't, these things, yes, we want to change ideas and conversations so people have more comfort, but then we got to realize things are constantly evolving. And so, you know, what you think, believe today could be changed tomorrow. So you have to provide grace. And I don't think there's enough grace being provided to people, especially if they're not being malicious about it.
Yeah. Like, I honestly wonder, you know, about some of the things that we do, how it's going to get perceived in the next 10, 20, 30 years. Like, I could very easily see OnlyFans, anybody who ever showed up on OnlyFans just getting like, I mean, right now, no one cares. Like, oh, OnlyFans, all right. Well, you know, you do your thing, whatever. All right. But what if it becomes a thing? You know, or what if canceling somebody becomes a thing where it's like you tried to shut him down and you wouldn't give him a chance to redeem himself? And it's like that could actually become a thing. So you never know.
Well, look at Chrissy. What's her name? Chrissy, John Legend's wife, Tegan. Remember back in the day, you know, everybody loved her on Twitter, and she would say things like "kill yourself" and to folks, you know, who were being egregious on social media, and everybody loved her. Fast forward, you know, 5, 7, 8 years later, wait a minute, you said that to that person, and they had mental health issues, canceled. So it's like, you know, so it's like the I'm saying, see how the ball is constantly shifting. So what is embraced today could be the one thing that gets you canceled like tomorrow, right? And so I think there just needs to be a lot more grace about everything. And I mean, you know, I think the best way to go about it is just be transparent about who you are, what you believe, and try to, you know, just put it out there. And I think, you know, you make it a little bit more leeway. But you got to be like Dave Chappelle, man. You got to have your own stuff, man. Because if you don't, man, they will hold that against you. And one more thing, and I know this is a little bit controversial, but I do not like the fact. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is controversial. I don't like the fact that, like, one of the first people to speak out against them was a National Black Justice Coalition. I'm like, dude, why does a black organization have to go after the black man? It is like, it's like, dude, just stay out of it. Let someone else talk about it. But you know, obviously, someone put them up to it to say something. But no,
you're supposed to have a big press conference where you say nothing. It's like, well, we're deeply, deeply interested in what the people have to say and their responses. We're going to take a look at this matter very seriously and launch an investigation. We will be going over the allegations and we will get back to you in 2 years and 3 months. You know, it's, and you know, you just kind of figure it out. But yeah, to be the first out there, you wonder where that motive's coming from,
exactly.
Who is pushing it, who's pulling what strings. It just seems very bizarre.
And it's all, I'm assuming it's all about dollars, man. So, I mean, you know, that's how I think. There's some strings attached to some dollars that someone got. Well, you know.
Dance me up, chicken sucker.
That dance for you, chicken.
We used to say it, I used to say it at work, man. I think that's part of the reason, you know, I'm just a normal guy at work. And all of a sudden I yell something out like that. And people are like, oh, dear.
Uh-oh. He's more militant than we thought. We got to watch him.
He's one of them.
They just, because they always like, oh, I thought he was. Yeah, good ones.
Yeah. Those blacks.
Anyway, guys, we digress. We're going down the path. Cancels this.
Well, you think you know somebody.
I know. So let's go to lighter tone real quick.
Shout out to John Mile. I'm gonna send this to him.
Definitely, man. John Mile. I hope he's still doing comedy, man. Make us laugh, man. Let's hear some funny stuff from you, John. But let's move on, man. So Squid Game, man, that thing is still dominating, man. That thing is killing it. This is a show versus business on the little numbers here. So basically, Netflix, you know, business wise is brilliant, and they do this for all their. I think we talked about a little bit, right, about their algorithm. But one of the things they did is the dubbing. They dubbed it in 34 languages. A subtitle in 37. Now, there's some controversy around that and whether it's accurate or not on both sides. But the fact that, you know, anytime a foreign movie or TV show comes out, they already have that meaning languages and subtitles tells you where their focus is at.
Global.
Yeah, definitely. And then they said the Squid Game demand has gone up 481% since its launch in September 17th, increasing every day. They said that's rare for a Netflix original, which says typically peaks in 2 to 4 days after release. So to be fair, I don't know if it's a Netflix official release. It may be. I didn't know that if it was a Netflix original. Sometimes they just take stuff from, other countries and just put it on their site. But I didn't know they actually, you know, spearheaded that. So that's kind of interesting.
As I understood, Netflix was doing its thing of going around the circuit and trying to find properties. And people had been trying to get Squid Game made for a while, and it connected with Netflix, and they were like, oh, okay, you've been trying to get this made? Boom. We're going to slap Netflix original on it and help actually get it made, so.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I don't know what this means exactly, this number, but it says had 102.9x more global demand than the average show. In comparison, Game of Thrones was 353.8x the average demand during this eighth and final season. So for a first-time show coming out the box, that's an impressive number. Numbers only make sense in comparison, right? It's like 100. I don't know what that means. Oh, Game of Thrones? Okay, that makes sense.
Right.
What else? Let's see. Anything else here?
Actually, it took a while for Game of Thrones to really build up. So you're talking about a little less than a third of what Game of Thrones had right out the bat. That's pretty good.
Man, that's amazing. I want to say this right. Is it Dogonis? Is that how you pronounce the candy? The little sugar candy that you lick?
I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Okay. The Soul Candy Maker says it now sells 500 plus Dogonis a day, 2x more than before. So that's kind of interesting. Just... That's stupid. The little candy makers. And if you go to TikTok, there are 227 billion views on anything with the hashtag Squid Game, including recipes on how to make Dogana. So anyway, high level Squid Game by all accounts is a phenomenon. But very simple. I mean, Netflix, I was right. I was thinking about this before. We'll talk about it later. But this is very similar to Queen's Gambit. I mean, just Bridgerton.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Netflix is, you know, whatever reason, the algorithm, I think that's what it is. They know enough where they say, okay, we're just going to make a show now. Sometimes it doesn't work, right? But when it does work, boom. They had three shows in the last, 12 to 18 months this, Queen's Gambit, and Bridgerton that just blew up. And so, and to them, I think that's a metric that they're looking for because that keeps people on the site. Because it's like, be fair, I have not been on Netflix in ever. But as soon as, you know, this Squid Game was popping up, I said, oh, I guess I got to watch Netflix. So I've never canceled. I'm like you. I'm so close. So close to canceling Netflix every time. So I can't watch this shit. Oh, this stuff is garbage. And it's sure enough, they find some kind of way to bring you back in, right? And so it's kind of interesting. I think that's what they're looking for because they're trying, man. So good to them. Good for them, man. Any other thoughts on the, we'll talk a little bit more about Squid Game later, but any other thoughts on that?
The news portion of it? No, not really. We'll get to the rest of it in the actual our thoughts and analysis of it.
Sounds good. Well, hey, everyone, let's go ahead and move into the feature. So this week, we're going to talk a little bit, the never-ending storytelling engine that's happening in Hollywood. Is it killing entertainment?
Is this never-ending story?
So I'll preface it by saying, so basically this came about on our, if you don't listen to our live set on Wednesdays on the ADD Experience, so Mr. Benja's Instagram live. This kind of came about organically as Mr. Benja and I were talking about this and just saying, hey, you know, all these shows and movies, and you talked about your rewatch of Loki. And I was like, well, what is going on with this entertainment? It just never ends. And so I think, you know, MCU has kind of spearheaded this, you know, well, supercharged. It's always kind of been around, but MCU really codified it and made it into a system. And that's what business is, really, just a bunch of systems that work to make as much money as possible and systems that are optimized. And that's what they created with this MCU. And someone even made an argument, can they not make a TV show or movie that is not in some way connected to some larger story? Because that goes into the discussions on what if as well, right? They're not making these one-off little onesie twosies because to them, that's not serving the bigger need of having this never-ending story that always has people engaged, always have people involved and things like that. So, what is your thoughts on that for as an artist, Mr. Benja? Is it killing entertainment? Are you not entertained by this?
Are you not entertained? You know what's funny? Here's where we need to define entertained. It delights me. It excites me. I'll tune in. I want to hear what people are talking about. I'm interested in the buzz. But as far as being an entertaining quote unquote story, I am definitely less excited about any story that they're telling. It all feels very gamified. And the last thing I want to do is become one of these, you know, Scorsese old fart kind of guys who's just like, this isn't a real story, you know, but I feel that.
That's not cinema.
I feel I'm slipping in that direction because it's the evolution of storytelling and it'll get better over time. But is it killing entertainment? I mean, there's a lot less of what we consider a story in there. So in that sense, yeah.
So you make a good point. So you're saying this is the future of storytelling, this never ending storytelling. We're always in act two. It never ends. Is that your thoughts on this?
I think that's definitely what we're moving to just by the nature of the system, the nature of the nature of the technologies that we're using, you know, constantly being able to share, connecting, you know, being part of a community. If I've got this online community and we're all talking about this one thing and somebody raises their hand, it's like, hi, I'm from this other community. And we watch, it's like, hey man, shut up. You're in this community over here. Let me show you the YouTube Easter egg video for some movie I don't care about. Let me, you know, here, you need to rewatch Thor 2.
Hold on. Are we all now the comic book guy from The Simpsons?
Yes.
The episode 22, the 32nd season of The Escape Artist, you saw that this character, he appeared back in. Yeah, that's where we are.
What you failed to realize is that Captain Kirk was never around during the. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
But you're right. I will push back a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about retconning. I think there's an opportunity to, in a certain subset of these stories, by doing a retcon or doing, reimagining, if you will, right? Because, there's some stuff I've seen recently where they've done that. This is over. So now, yes, this story will continue, but, it's going to be different. And so I think there's an opportunity to kind of end these stories, even though it's not going to be, it doesn't have to be a never ending, second act, if you will, right? Where they never finish and complete the story. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next few years. So can I
jump in here with a little bit of information on the retcon?
Sure.
The definition of retcon: the act, practice, or result of changing an existing fictional narrative by introducing new information in a later work that recontextualizes previously established events, characters, etc.
So it's basically a way just to make new shit up.
I changed my mind.
Yeah, basically. So we hinted at this. We will have a pitch, Marvel, for Iron Man 1. There was a character, more specifically, there was an actor that was slated to be War Machine, Terrence Howard. Marvel, we humbly submit to you, we need to bring Terrence Howard back into the MCU and create a multiverse version of War Machine with Terrence Howard. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The people back this decision, man.
They do. They do, man. Because it's hard out there for a pimp. We got to make it happen.
So, to your point, though, I think it's hard to say, is it making it worse? Well, according to your current metric of what a story is and what your entertainment value is, yes. But then suddenly the metrics are all changing. How many characters, how many shows do I like? How many retweets does it get? How much, there's just an entirely different metric. Like, I've seen kids or younger people, I shouldn't even say younger, because, people from a different demographic liking something for a completely different reason than you might say, well, the story's good. Dude, doesn't have much cinematography. And I'm like, I'm watching like an old Dick Tracy film. I'm like, I get it. It's like, well, it's got this and that. Yeah, but it doesn't have like Dolby surround. It sounds like shit. I'm like, yeah, I guess so. So the metrics are changing too. And, I don't know what that means for people who are coming up or who've never experienced this kind of thing, but this model is going to be spreading through the entire entertainment industry, I believe.
Oh, that's interesting.
In some way or form.
Well, let's talk about it. I mean, just this year alone, I just wrote a few things here. Shang-Chi, really all MCU movies and TV shows, is basically setting up new things, right? We talked about that on a previous podcast. That's definitely setting some new things up and intersecting with other things. Mortal Kombat, you were concerned about that, and I didn't see it, but you pretty much said it's all set up. The Many Saints of Newark, so this is a Sopranos prequel that is a movie, but it's like, I saw it recently, and it's basically nothing but Easter eggs, man. I mean, it's just like, you watch it, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's, young Paul Walnuts, or yeah, that's, that guy, that's Pussy when he was younger, but it's like, is this a movie? Or is this something, is this creating the Soprano cinematic universe? I don't know. So it's kind of like, what is that about? You wrote here, Better Call Saul, right? Yeah, that's a prequel and a sequel potentially of one of the greatest shows ever, Breaking Bad. I don't know if you watched this show, Power. Have you ever seen any of that at all?
I haven't seen Power.
Yeah, me and my wife watched it, and watches because they too have created a cinematic, a TV universe where all these different characters spun off. So usually, remember, you would do a spinoff. That character do his own thing. But now this spun off like four different characters. So now they got all these stories So it's like about four episodes, TV shows come from this one TV show.
Yeah.
That people loved. And so I also did a little experiment. So I'm going through the box office so far for 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see if any of these movies here are going to have, I have not set up anything. They're just like standalone. That's it. So the first one is Shang-Chi. No. Black Widow. No. They set up so much stuff. F9. Even the Brothers with the Space. They're still going to have some more stuff coming up. Quiet Place 2. I guarantee they're going to come back to the world again. Free Guy. That may be one and done, but that's the only one. That was the first five right there. After that, I'm looking at this. Venom, no. Jungle Cruise, maybe they may go back to it or not. I don't know. But you know what? Well, it's part of that Disney cinematic ride universe, right? With Pirates.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole thing where it's like, you know, you're automatically, if you've been to Disney, you go see the Jungle Cruise. Same thing with like Pirates of the Caribbean. They're expecting all of their Disney fanatics to automatically go see it. So it's kind of like, yeah, you've been on the ride. Let me take you deeper into that world. And it's a whole thing. So I would say that falls under that umbrella too.
Godzilla versus Kong. Definitely. Mm-hmm. That's going to be continued. Cruella. That's going to be continued. Space Jam. It took 20 years, but I have a feeling they'll probably figure out a way to do it again. So this is the first horror film, The Conjuring. The Devil Made Me Do It. So there you go. That just tells you that this is part of the biggest cinematic universe.
I didn't know about The Conjuring. I brought that up in a group of friends, and somebody says, oh, man, you got to get in on The Conjuring. I'm like, oh, what's so good about the movie? It's like, dude, it's more than a movie. It's The Conjuring. It's like this little doll and Annabelle. There are all these other movies connected to it, and yes, it's the only universe.
So hey, when you got something, say The Conjuring The Devil, you know, it's a universe.
Yeah.
Candyman, we'll see. It's more of a, you know, reimagining. The Boss Baby yes, that's a whole universe. Yeah. If you didn't know, it's The Boss Baby has its own universe. It's got TV shows, movies. Yes, he's got a sister. And only reason I know this is because I have kids. The Suicide Squad, they're going to keep trying. Matter of fact, they do. Peacemaker, he's got a TV show coming out that came mm-hmm. from the Suicide Squad. So, Raya and the Last Dragon, that might be the only one. Old is new. Tom and Jerry. That might be one off. The Forever Purge, no. Peter Rabbit 2, no. Anything for Colin. Paw Patrol, . So, basically, of the 20 things I did here, I think there's only like three that are probably not going to have anything that continues on that story. So there you go, Mr. Binger. Everybody's creating the universe.
Dude, you can almost continue this down until, In the Heights, probably on its own. I'm just going through. Wow. Yeah. It's really scattered. And, you know, it's interesting. Now that I'm thinking about when we used to go to the movies, there'd be this big board of all the shows that were playing at the time. And what you would basically pick is, oh, there's a horror film. Oh, there's a family film. Oh, there's an action film. And the idea was, when Hollywood was planning their schedules and their release dates, anytime you went to the movies for a weekend out, you would always see one type of movie that you wanted to see. Now, if you look and see something, it's like, well, is this thing continuing my universe? Is that, oh, there's a new chapter of this. There's a new whatever. And it's kind of weird because, as you said, I'm just scrolling down the list. All of this stuff is connected to something. There are very few, you know, random out there by themselves releases. And even the ones you mentioned, like Candyman or Raya and the Last Dragon, those are part of I don't even know what to call them, but you know, you've got like your Disney animation or your Pixar animation. There are people who are like going to see that because of the brand. And Candyman, you go see that because of the Jordan Peele brand.
Good point. Yeah, you're right about that. And there's some, like, I don't know if you saw Nobody, but that looks like that's a buddy kind of wannabe, John Wick, you know, that's with, Better Call Saul actor, Bob Odenkirk.
Right.
And right. He's trying to be like John Wick now, right? So there you go. So anyway, it's just, man, dude, man, it's entertainment, man. So I want to pivot to new ideas. And so I think that's why the power of new ideas that pop up out of blue take over so well, because like if one new idea pops up, like for instance the Squid Game, right? Like Queen's Gambit, Schitt's Creek, or even Ted Lasso, they just came out of nowhere, right? People didn't expect those to be hits. That's what, and then they take over, and now, you know, those are opportunities to become their own kind of universes, right? Because it had a spark. But there's so far and few between, it's kind of interesting. But I thought that was but when they hit so hard, man. It's like, dude, it's like, oh, wow, everybody's watching it. I literally went to the store at the Publix here. And, you know, I was just talking to somebody.
What's a Publix?
Yeah, Publix. You don't know about that one, man. What you got up there, man? What you got up there? You got a...
Oh, man, you got to be from Florida to know what a Publix is. Go ahead. I'm
So I talked to somebody, the young ladies, you know, bagging the groceries. I said, yeah, for the Halloween, I'm going to be a soldier from Squid Game. She said, oh, yeah, me too. So it's like, I talked to about five people, and they knew exactly what I was talking about. So there you go. The power of Squid Game is everywhere. So, Mr. Benji, any other thoughts about this?
You know what? I like the idea of these new things coming out the surprising ones, not like the new garbage of people just standing over on the side. I'm going to be weird just to be weird. I'm going to be make something different. And you're like, yeah, man, whatever. Your stuff is whack. But then somebody who actually has a really strong story to tell and there's no predefined way to tell it, then it's like, boom, I've really got to make something strong, unique, and see it all the way through the process from marketing it to hyping it up, getting the money and funding behind it. You know, it takes a lot for a lot of these projects. Like they were saying, Squid Game took a gang of time to get out there. And same thing with Why the Last Man. Even that took a long time to get out there. So,
yeah,
I'm all for it.
Yeah, so we'll see, man. It's, you know, like I said, I do get excited when there's new content and it's exciting. And so I just hope we get more of that, you know. So,
wait, hold on. When you get you said new content that excites you, what makes you like excited about new content as opposed to, all right, that's new and I don't care. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, I be honest with you, my barometer is my wife, man. You know, we have such different tastes when it comes to entertainment. Whenever she gets excited and I get excited, I say, oh, that hit the mark, right? Because, you know, I could be eclectic with my, not saying I'm a snob, but, you know, I'm going to know, you know, 9 times out of 10 what this show is about. But when something breaks through like Queen's Gambit did, like Squid Game did to her, that's all. This is it. So I think that's kind of my barometer of what's, you know, she hasn't watched Ted Lasso, but, you know, I got the appeal of that, you know, and just listen to podcasts of what's happening out there. So, so to me, it's more around what breaks through to the masses because, you know, I watch stuff all the time. You know, I watch some esoteric stuff like Mythic Quest or Foundation that I know probably didn't break through. I mean, if Foundation breaks through, man, I'll be so happy, man. It just got renewed for a second season on Apple TV. But yeah, I don't know if that's going to break through. But you never know. I was a day one for Game of Thrones, man. I was day one. I saw the show. I was like, I don't know about it. You know, I don't like fantasy, but I'll go check it out. And then when, you know, spoiler alert, but when Jamie threw Bran out the window, I'm like, I guess I'm in.
Yeah.
Because it upturned your expectations. And so I was off to the races as a fan at that point. So like I said, you just don't know. That's what excites me because, you know, you just don't know where it's coming from. You know, there might be, you know, some TV show someone comes out of, you know, on Roku that hits the fan. Now I got to go buy a Roku subscription.
I found out that you could, it's a relatively low barrier of entry to create your own show that ends up on Roku.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Show versus business on Roku.
Yeah. We did it. I think also there's a low barrier to entry to have a movie on Amazon. I think because it's a
movie there. Oh God. Bruh. Unfinished movies, just it's wild out there.
Yeah.
So when you're checking out these new movies and things, you say you use your wife as a barometer. That's cool. How do you? I mean, do you try looking out for these, or do they just kind of fall in your lap?
They kind of fall in my lap. I mean, you know, I'm kind of aware of a lot of different things. You know, because I'm listening to the podcast, look at YouTube videos, and I scroll through Netflix and see what anything I'm interested in. A lot of foreign stuff, Beyonce doesn't hit my radar because it's so much, and so I'm kind of like, You know, when Squid Game hit, I said, okay, I'll go check it out. But, I don't know, man. I'm trying to think, you know, I'm not actively, because, you know, you never can guess these things, man. Who knows?
Yeah.
And it's like,
I'm checking out The Morning Show right now.
Hey, what do you think?
I like it.
Do I need to jump back in? Are you still in the first season?
Oh, I'm early on, so very early on.
Yeah, so
I'll come back to
the episodes. So, so we'll see. I mean, like I said, I was a fan of Mythic Quest, and I'm assuming you have you seen that yet?
Still haven't seen it.
What? You probably like, I already know this world. I don't need to see this again.
But that should be why I do see it, but at the same time, it's the reason I haven't seen it.
I get it. Yeah, I get it. It's like, if I got to watch something like that about healthcare, I'm like, I'm not watching that shit. anyway, so we'll move it on, everyone. Thank you for listening to us about this interesting topic. So we're going to do something different. We're going to get into what we call our new segment called SVB Thoughts, Show versus Business Thoughts. And so this is going to be a quick overview of some of the hottest, you know, pop culture events, TV shows, movies. Be warned, spoiler alert for these shows, so we can have a freestyle kind of conversation. But today we're going to talk a little bit about Squid Game and then the What If finale. So, Mr. Benjo, what do you want to talk about first?
Let's get What If out the way.
All right, let's do it. Did you like it?
No.
You want some of this, old man? No.
Yes, exactly.
For those that don't know, Friday reference there. Let's see. Go ahead. Go first.
It wasn't bad, but it was. I don't know. It just wasn't. Okay, I'm looking at your notes here. Passable. I gotta totally agree, even before you say it.
I mean, it's functional. It did everything it's supposed to do. Pull all the stories together, right? It made sense. You know, spoiler alert, but it made sense why you could.
Yes.
Why Killmonger was on the team. At first, I was like, why is he on the team? And it made sense. Right, they knew what he was going to do, and that's what they needed to get the stones and suspended animation. But the only thing wasn't sure about was Gamora. It was like she was not featured at all in any of these stories, and she just came out of nowhere. I mean, I get, you know, her connection to Thanos and Infinity Stones, but it's just kind of like it's another reason to show that Tony ain't shit. It's so good. Who's going to have him show up? Yeah, she's with Tony, and he goes to watch her. Tony said, yeah, I'll help you. We don't need you. We need her. So once again, Tony gets killed or looked over. So they're really going hardcore on this, like, hey, Tony Stark, yes, he built us, the MCU, but we don't need you no more, mate. We got other stars. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, to the point about Gamora, she wasn't even. There was a whole episode that they didn't end up producing.
Oh, you think that's what it was?
No, that's what it was.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So yeah, there was I looked it up, and there was the whole Gamora thing that was supposed to happen, and it never ended.
About it. Do you know what it was? The story going to be about?
No, they say it may end up on season two.
Okay.
If that actually transpires and there is a season two, but I think they're setting up for a way to just tell weird stories and try out things. So I think What If will probably be around for more seasons.
Yeah. And then another thing that bugged me was just the Infinity Stones, you know, how they're working outside in a different multiverse. So I don't, you know, maybe to your point, you know, if we go back to Loki, and maybe they weren't in the multiverse, but they were maybe in the quantum realm, which is Farndale. And maybe, you know, Infinity Stones don't work in that pocket, in that version. Yeah. So I hope
if you can only use an Infinity Stone from your own dimension,
So
if you're able to transport yourself to another dimension with those Infinity Stones, you could still use them.
Yeah.
But if you were to go into another dimension and try to use another, there were a whole bunch of, hey, maybe we can say this. And
they never explained that at all. So, you know, so, but Mr. Binger, you get the, what was it back in the day? The Stan Lee Award. The No Prize. You get the No Prize for explaining that.
The No Prize. It's funny. People are trying to bring that back in like forums and YouTube channels. Basically, what the No Prize was, if there was a story mess up, miscontinuity, or they forgot something, a plot hole, something just didn't line up, right? What they would end up doing is somebody would write in and say, hey, I noticed this problem in the stories. You said that he always goes to church on Sundays and does this and that. But if that was really the case, he wouldn't have been able to show up here and there. So you had him at lunch on this one day, but he should have been at church. What are you saying? And then you bring up that problem, and then you would actually say, but aha, here's how this makes sense. And you would explain Marvel's mistake for them, you would get a No Prize.
I love it. Kevin Feige shit, man. I mean, you know, because he's getting some choppy waters here, man. I mean, you know, when you first start this whole thing, I get that part. You had to be very clear and focused. But you're talking about the multiverse, man. You're going to mess up. You're going to mess up, bro.
They're going to mess up with Venom. I can see it. They're going to mess something up.
Yeah, we messed it up, man. It's too much going on, man. So just outsource it, man. And guess what? The fans will love you, especially if a fan gets a No Prize and they're featured in something, shaking Kevin Feige's head, dude. Man, people, it would kill everything. So anyway, high level, I liked it overall. What has kept my interest it was one of the shows I kind of look forward to watching. I mean, high level, let's take a step back and just talk about high level. Do we like the series? I thought it was great. You know, kind of kept my interest. You know, I thought it was building to something. I like some of the characters more than others, but majority of the characters I did like. I liked that they used the original actors' voices. So that was kind of interesting and new and different. Overall, I would give passable. I would give the whole series a solid B, because, you know, it did what it's supposed to do. It was entertaining and it kept my interest.
Okay. I give it a 3 out of 6 binges. I have a rating system in my head, so I didn't, if you're asking me to do grades, I have to actually stop and think about that. Three, it's more on the side of I could miss this and be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not really good on second seasons unless the story is that compelling. So I agree. It might not be as a watch for me next season, but who knows? I mean, and I think I probably won't be a watch because I don't think the stakes are clear, right? Because there's multiverse, anything can happen. So it's kind of like the stakes are not as clear. That's kind of maybe the thing I'm not getting from it. But, it was kind of hokey. What did they call them? The Guardians of the Multiverse? I was like, oh, I groaned so hard.
Yeah, oh, yeah, when they said that. So, okay. And here's the thing I don't think they're picking up with. They're not utilizing as much as they could with the What If series, is using this to actually bring up a scenario that's so wild and so interesting in your head that it's got that hook point that just pulls you in. that, you know, that log line that's like, this is something I actually need to see because I wonder how it would play out. You know, real quick, I'm just looking at some of the best Marvel comics, best What If comics. You know, what if Professor X became the Juggernaut? You know, that's, let's see, what if Fantastic Four didn't get powers and they're all technologically based? So they end up like a team of Iron Man kind of crazy people. What if, you know, I mean, it's just like, and these aren't even that great, but that's the idea. You know, you get you thinking like, huh, what if that did happen? Let me go watch this. Okay, I mean, what if T'Challa became Star-Lord? You're like, I don't know, jungle drums in space? What you talking about?
I mean, they tried to base it in character, right? I mean, because I see where they're going with that. They were saying, okay, what if T'Challa didn't have the whole responsibility of being a king? Would he still be regal and a leader? And I thought that was interesting. And with Captain Carter, what if she had the power of Captain, you know, America, right? Would she still be, you know, the badass she is? And I would say yes, even more so. So, matter of fact, I love the character. I think it's a great character, man. It's, you know, so they really kind of made me like her. So I don't know. I think they were trying to base it in some kind of character defining things.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
But to your point, you know, was it really compelling with something like Thor if he was the only child? I mean, sure. Yes, it'd be interesting to see if he didn't have that burden of trying to, you know, get Loki to be good, but and also it's kind of comedy anyway, but, I don't know. To your point, let's think, you know, what if, you know, there was no, what if Fury died or something, you know, and what would, you know, who would lead them or something like that? I don't know, something different.
I had a list somewhere. It was good. But check this out. Somebody on crack.com or CBR.com, comic resources, had a pretty good list. What if the Ironmonger lived? Like, that was basically Obadiah Stane's big version of the Iron Man. So now you have a competing company to the Stark Industries that's Obadiah Stane's and that just exists. You know, it's not like one of them goes away and one wins and one loses. It's like, oh, wow. So you have like an evil version of the Iron Man technology that's kind of just floating out there. Let's see.
No, I think, that's kind of, you know, what you're getting at. Have you watched that Apple TV show For All Mankind yet?
Well, I don't even know what that's about.
So that's like the perfect idea for a what if show. Basically, it's a very simple premise. Instead of America getting to the moon first, what if the Russians did? And from there, a whole plethora of opportunities explode because now, you know, the space race doesn't end. And America has to constantly keep pace with Russia. Russia has to do the same. So instead of us focusing on, you know, issues down here on the planet, we're focused more on space stuff. And basically NASA has this massive budget and they're going to Mars in 1990 instead of, you know, never. So it's like, so stuff like that is kind of like, you know, they already have a moon base in the 80s, you know? So stuff like that is like amazing to me. It's like, dude, just find a simple premise. Change it up one little thing, and that changes everything from economics to society. You know, in this version, the Russians also put women into space first, too. So now America has to put women in space. So that changes the dynamic socially, too.
But you know why you can't get those good ideas?
Why?
Because the serialization is ruining entertainment.
It all comes together. I love it. I love it. You're right.
Yep.
You're right, man. It's, because it's struggling because they can't go outside the box too much because they got at the end of, you know, season 9 or episode 9, they have to get the Guardians of the Multiverse together, right? Fight the bad guys. So, yeah, good point. Anyway, so, well, it was a good watch. So it's been fun kind of reviewing it. But to your point, you know, we'll see where it goes from here. So real quick, let's talk a little bit about the Squid Game that's been taking over everybody. I don't know. This will be spoilers. So we're going to talk, you know, high level about everything. If you haven't seen it, go check it out on Netflix. But spoiler alert, Don't listen if you haven't seen it yet. So, Mr. Binger, two questions. Did you like it and did you binge it?
It was a little heavy to binge. I really liked it, really enjoyed it. And it's playing out like some of these new dramas where they're a little slow. They take their time in that first episode, and towards the second third or the last third of the episode is when they hit you with like, nah, we're coming. So they did a good job of balancing it out. Just enough interesting stuff every few minutes to keep you going. And I really enjoyed it. I took in about 2-3 episodes a day. So it took me like 3 days to watch it. Good stuff.
Good. So true story. I watched it the first episode and I fell asleep on it because it was late at night. Okay. And so my wife was screaming, you know, spoiler alerts, when they first played their red light, green light. So what is going on? And she was freaking out. I was like, what's going on? I fell asleep at that part. So, so that's, you know, when shit got real. Right. And so, so then I tried to watch it the next night and fell asleep again. And so, then the third night, me and my wife were watching it. She fell asleep and I watched up to a certain point, the tug of war game. And then she, took it from there. She just took off and watched the end, and I had to binge it to finish it all on Monday of last week. So make a long story short, I liked it. You know, I just, you know, it was just because, you know, it's a lot of subtitles. So just, you know, and late at night, I get a little.
Wait, you didn't watch the English version?
Heck no, nah, man. I watched no dub version, bro. I like to hear the real version actor's voice, man. It's just, I'm a purist, man, but they said even the dialogue was written badly on the the bottom
subtitles.
The subtitles, yeah.
Yeah, so with what you were saying with like the number of translations they had to do, I could see that team being very stressed out and time strapped. Because that stuff takes a lot of time. And because if you really want to do it correctly, because we had to do this for video games.
Oh, wow.
If you really want to do it correctly, you make a story, you have your ideas, and then it goes out and you're like, well, wait a minute. This whole concept of, you know, just whatever, like a Squid Game doesn't make any sense. You have to at least put a certain amount of explanation in it. It's like, well, we don't have any more film to do. How do we shoehorn this idea in? It's like, well, you can either shoehorn it in or you can just kind of gloss over it. And you have to make these decisions and you keep going back and forth. Yeah. There were things we were doing in Red Dead Redemption where it's like, it's a Western and, you know, you can't just throw the word cowpoke around and somebody might say, what are you poking cows? What are you talking about? It's just a weird term when you translate it. So somebody may translate cowpoke into something else. And then when I look back at it, I'm like, his buddy, it's not his buddy, it's a cowpoke. You know? So it just gets weird in translation, right? That's a minor example. But a lot of Korean Americans were kind of upset that a lot of the subtleties and the information was lost. I watched with some of the subtitles just to see the difference, like while I had the subtitles and the dub on.
I did so, that a couple times, to be fair, yeah.
I don't know that I saw anything out of place, but apparently a lot of the cultural shifts did make a difference to a lot of people. But,
yeah. Yeah, from a storytelling standpoint, you know, it gets into, like, motivations, right? I think someone made a point.
Sure.
Like, man, and that's why I have this healthy reference here. Let's see. I'm going to get it right here. So I think, Jae Yong, she was the young lady that played with Sebok. I hope I'm saying it right. But so she was the one that you know, got released from prison, you know, and they said the way she said it, though, her motivations around certain things, the translation wasn't correct. And so you know, it seems like, you know, it came from a more of an inner place. I don't know exact words, but basically our motivation was more internal versus external. And so that can change, right? And so that gives you more nuance to the character when you don't have the words right. So, and that's why I wanted to hear the actor's voice, because I want to hear, because, you know, if I'm reading subtitles, you know, if I'm, you know, listen to their voice, I can kind of get a sense there's better performance there, right? You know, for what I'm hearing their voices. But, and then that came in handy too when I'm listening to, I bet you were surprised. He's like, wait a minute, are they speaking English now for real? At the end when the fat cat showed up, right? And so, did you think that was dubbed too, or did you check to see if that was dubbed at the end there?
No, I didn't even, this whole thing kind of glossed over me. I just kept watching.
Yeah, I was like, no, they're not dubbing this. This is their actual voice. They're talking. So anyway, in English, high level. So yeah, I liked it. I thought it was great. So second question, you know, from business. So we talked about show, the business side. Why do you think it resonated with the world, man? It seemed like just took us by the seat of our opinions. Everybody just grabbed onto it.
You know, at any given time, there are things that are being thought about by the populace that aren't being represented on screen or in entertainment, and people are just kind of waiting on it to pop off. So it could be any number of things. So, you know, it's just a kind of shrug your shoulders. It's something that was existing right under the surface. We're used to seeing a lot of these Korean and Japanese game/tournament type shows. So the interest has been there a while, from Battle Royale to Gantz Zero, some anime on Netflix, like I forgot the name of the show, but there's a bunch of people running around a building and they're trying to survive. It's a very survival of the fittest, or we have to come together so the best of us can survive kind of thing. So it's been a vibe that's going around. And I think now is a kind of a good time where, you know, the zombie thing was one thing, but now going into the pandemic, it's like zombies aren't as entertaining anymore, you know? So instead of that type of survival, maybe there's another type of survival where we're playing this game. It's all corporate. It's all for other people's benefit. I think it's just matching up with people's sensibilities a little more.
Yeah, I would agree. It's like, you know, we kind of hinted at like Ted Lasso and Schitt's Creek. Those took off during the pandemic because they were nicer, friendlier shows. And, you know, we were dealing with, you know, Hellion called President Trump, whether you believe it or not. If nothing else, he was an agent of chaos. And so having shows that were a little bit more softer, gentler, nicer, like those two shows, really kind of hit the zeitgeist where it counted. Likewise, the zeitgeist is about, you know, surviving and trying to figure this out. You know, we all been through hell and back, right, through the pandemic. And so this is what the show is about. But it's also embedded with, like, great, propulsive, you know, storytelling. There was no fat on that at all, right? I mean, you know, usually these Netflix shows are very bloated and they take, you know, oh man, this is, I don't know, why is this here? I couldn't really count any episode, even the second episode, which when they all decided to go back was very important because it showed, hey, they were here, their lives at home were hell. That's why you would choose to be in this. So it was like, now you knew that, you know, they wanted to be there. So it wasn't like they were trapped like any other horror film. And so that made it even more, you know, inciting. And then they had a lot of cliffhangers that were, you know, like tug away. I guarantee
that had me laughing, dog. That cliffhanger, the way it happened.
Oh yeah, because the tug away. Yeah, I mean, anybody who saw that is like, I just gotta watch it. if you watch it at 3 a.m., you're like, I'm not going to sleep to 5. So I'm just gonna just watch it because they knew, you know, they got you, man. And so so it's a combination of just zeitgeist, you know, moment. But also, I think, propulsive storytelling and also relevance. I mean, great storytelling because they made it seem they by putting it in kids' games, you know, made you kind of reminisce about your kids' games, your friends. But also, like, they made, because of survival, they made you think. I mean, I thought about all the time. What would you do in that situation, right?
Yeah.
And so that was, and so they drew you in by thinking, what would you do? And the nostalgia element. I mean, a lot of those games we didn't know, but just playing with your friends back in the day, I thought that was kind of interesting. So from a business standpoint, beautiful, beautiful story.
I like how they, I got really invested in the whole thing when, you know, the guy was like, he met him in the subway station and they were playing the game where you flip the paper cards over. And that little slap game was something so simple, but it's something that we would have played as kids. I could just immediately imagine that. And the guy's like, wait, you want to play the paper slapping game right now? Are you kidding me? And he lost and he got smacked. And it was like, man, the world's smacking me down. This is crazy. What's happening? And I was invested right then. I was like, okay, here we go.
It was such a good test too, because it was a test of how much pain would this guy endure, right? Just the weird. Yeah. And so like why he would be perfectly, ready for this type of experience. And I'm sure everyone else would do similar tests, right? Before they kind of did it. So, Guillaume, who was the main protagonist. And I like the fact that he wasn't the smartest. He wasn't the sharpest, the cleverest. And he probably, he had moments of humanity, but he probably wasn't the nicest guy either, right? All the time. But, so he was just perfectly average. And so, and so it was like, you could kind of get behind him a little bit because he wasn't like his buddy who was super smart or the other people who were very manipulative, right? Or villainous. So he was a perfect person to kind of follow along on this story, on this track. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. So, kudos to that.
Yeah. And the paper chase, that's very appropriate for right now. If a lot of people are trying to get money and what are they going to go through? Are they playing a big game that they really can't win? Yeah, a lot of thoughts.
Yeah, societal stuff. I mean, this is, South Korea, the same country that came up with Parasite, which is very similar themes around, how you're going to make it a society now, right? And I think that's driven a lot of folks, right? Especially after the pandemic. People quitting jobs, right? Because they want to stay at home. They don't want to work for the corporate man. And so, or people want to be YouTube stars, right? And just do videos all day. So it is definitely an interesting time.
You know what I do at home?
What's that?
Make podcast.
Go on IG, brother. Go IG.
Hey, screw the man.
Hey, real quick. Well, we'll talk about it in the next session real quick. So real quick, we'll just do some quick awards. What's the best game?
Tug of War.
I would agree, but I would say the Red Light, Green Light, because that... No, well, dude, I don't know. I like them all. I'm such a buster. Red Light, Green Light establishes stakes, right? It's like, dude, you're going to die. This case, right? So that was great. Yeah. But I also love the glass thing, because that was...
That was cool.
That was like, you didn't know where you should be, number one, to play.
Yeah.
And then there was all these different things that were hindering you from making correct decisions because it's 50-50 chance. People were going to push you. There was a time limit. And so it was like, you were bound to die.
that one didn't make sense to me as a game at first. I was like, oh, wait, what kind of game is this? Who's going to? But then it really brought in those character aspects of like who chose first, who chose last. And then like what happens if somebody doesn't want to move? That was great. I was like, yo, dude might just stop and then stop.
Well, that's what they did brilliantly in every one of the show, even the part about like, what if you want to go home? They answered every thought you could think of, before while you were looking at this, and it all made sense, right? Like you said, what if someone stopped? Or even the fact, like, what if you want to go home? And so so I thought that was kind of brilliant. And they even answered a question about what's happening behind the scenes with the cop character, right? Where he was going behind everything, doing the research instead of a lot of talking people. Oh yeah. Back in, we've been just starting the Squid Game since 2008 and blah, 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 blah. They just showed you, man. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Storytelling. He was in there. You saw all the binders. You saw what they did. You saw, so it was like they showed it to you instead of telling you, and that was made it great. So.
There was actually one game that doesn't really get counted in these lists, and that is the Triangle Dinner.
Why was that a game?
They gave them all a knife and let them sleep in a room. it was a smaller version of that night where everything just kind of broke out and went crazy, And then it's like, well, now we're gonna We're going to feed you. We're going to make you happy, relax your guard a little bit. And then they leave him with knives. Oh, that was hard, baby. That was hard. That was tough. I was like, ooh.
I mean, but I thought, go ahead, sorry.
Well, and then they only broke it up when one of them died. Yeah. So right when they died, they rolled in and was like, stop fighting. And they wouldn't let him finish right then. So they're like, we still got our final game. So I thought that was.
And I thought that was interesting too, the whole, when that first guy died, you know, and no one knew what to do. But as soon as that money popped off, everybody knew what the stakes were then. I said, you're going to die. It was like killing is legal now. It's like the purge, right? But just escalated. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of, because it's a lot of stuff they did in there. It was just like, they knew, you know, they had answered a lot of questions you had in the back of your mind. And someone, I got to rewatch it, but someone said all the games are in the background of their environment. So like on the walls are written down. I got to go look at it again. But every game that they were playing was already kind of hinted at already. So they had paid attention.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if like in Korea, they would have been a little more familiar with those games. Like I saw Tug of War. I didn't know what it was. I just saw people on the wall. But when they removed some of the cots and the beds, you could actually see that, oh, they're playing Tug of War.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So, I thought that was kind of interesting, man. And then, what was the best twist for you?
Ooh, the best twist. I actually didn't think, I thought they were going to have some BS reason for them not to quit the game. But like you were saying in the second episode where they're like, okay, everybody decided to quit. And I kind of paused like, really? Okay, let's watch what happens. And then they all came right back. Well, most of them.
Yeah, most of them. No, I agree. That was probably the best twist they did in the second episode. Just get that out the way. Their life is so terrible. The chance to win, you know, I think in America is like $33 million is better than, you know, and dying potentially than staying where they were. So,
you got a dude coming for your kidneys and he's already got like a signature in blood. You know, where you said that, yes, he can come take my organs.
That's right. It sure did. He was out. Okay. And then finally, best character. Who's your best character? If you want, I also put the link there. If you want to check out the link for to get their names somewhat right.
I liked the old man right off the bat when red light, green light happened.
You know, none. Yeah.
Because he was just like, he just took off. Like, I'm an old man. I know how to play this game. So that seems too easy for me, but I would say the old man.
I would like him too if I did. The twist, you know, big spoiler, was that he was the one behind this whole thing from the beginning. It's like, of course he would run out. You know, he probably didn't have any stakes. I'm sure they weren't going to kill him. So I don't know. That kind of turned me off to everything he was saying. I mean, he was trying to lead, you know, folks on this journey, but he was playing a game where he probably couldn't die. I don't know. It was kind of turned me off to him. Obviously, Gi-hung, I mean, he kind of got murdered sometimes, but I mean, he's up there. I liked him. But really, man, the villain.
Which one was that?
The main character, Gi-hung.
Okay.
The main character. But really, the character that kind of, you know, popped for me. But I also liked his friend, Sang-woo, the one, you know, the investment guy.
Yeah.
I liked him. He was epitome of business, right? He's just trying to get over.
It makes it. I like, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. But I really like, if I say this right, Min-yo-yo. Min-yo, she was the villainous woman. And she was hilarious to me because she was the one at the very beginning said, I have a baby and I have to leave. This is ridiculous. I haven't even named my child yet. And as soon as she went up there, she looked up at the money and she said, I'm staying. She said, what? And to me, that's what happened. And ever since then, she was always, you know, on tilt. And it's like, she was just everywhere, man. And she even went out like a gangster, man. So I you know, much props to the actress and much props to that character, man. It just popped, man. Everything about her, it was just like, she was funny. She's just the right amount. It wasn't too much, but, you know, but she was just the right amount of annoying, villainous, you know, somewhat helpful, you know, kind of person.
Yeah.
Anyway, so man, dude, hey, if you haven't checked out Squid Game, go check it out. Wonderful show. We loved it.
Real quick question. Do you think that the old man was the previous year's winner for the previous sessions? I don't know if it's done yearly or however long the schedule, but it seemed like they were setting up like, hey, this is a cycle that continues. You got all this money and you're just kind of ugh about life.
Yeah, they did kind of hint at that. I mean, I also thought the front man was also part of this game before, too, who ended up being the cop's brother. But they didn't really kind of say that. So I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff that can be explored, you know, on the sequel. Because, like I said, there's no fat. I mean, I'm trying to think, was there anything that lagged on that show? And there was nothing that lagged to me. Maybe a little bit when they're at home, but it all made sense later. But, I mean, just everything about that show just.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? You're talking about everything working out together and just made me think. In the police station, that was the only time I was thinking about this seems like a little bit of a plot hole and a failing, where it's like the police are just like, hey, I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, this is stupid. Nobody's talked about a game. Who's brought this to our attention? Well, okay, we'll save the card for later. And of course, his brother, police, probably had a connection in there, you know, just to smooth the whole thing over. So
the front man,
I need to see some front man costumes for Halloween.
I know, man, that was a hot one. That's integrated. Where that thing was, he says, I know you were here because I always put my receiver down on the other side. I was like, damn, he was ready. So, I don't know, man, it's just, and then like just stuff like the harvesting of organs on the subplot. I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, because, you know. And the front man didn't care. I don't care if you make money. You just didn't make it fair. And so it was just like all kinds of stuff in there, man. Just basically these, and then the value of a human being, you know, dollars and the organs. It was just like nothing.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, unfortunately, the vast majority of, you know, folks in the world, man. So, man, it's social commentary, great storytelling, great characters, and very bingeable with, you know, twist endings and things like that. So, great job, man. Great job.
Yes, yes.
So, Mr. Bidja, what's going on as we wrap up for you this week?
What's going on? Well, you know, getting into the October season, I got to put out some more horror business, scare people a little bit, dig into the depravity of my mind and see what I can come up with. So, should be fun.
Yeah, I see something behind you, man. This little dark man looking back at me in black on what your left side looks like. Uh-oh.
We coming.
Uh-oh. So, yeah.
And I'm watching, what's that called on Netflix? Mass. Crap. Forgot the name of it. There's a show that's hot, once again, on Netflix. Midnight Mass.
Oh, yeah. How is that?
It's very intentionally done, and they say it starts out slow, so I just plowed through the first episode, and yeah, there's a lot of intention there. I don't know what they're building up to. I don't know where it's going, but my people who are in the weeds are digging it, and my people who are very mass market are into it, so I'm like, okay, did Netflix just get me again for another one? So... But my subscription ends in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Gotcha, brother. Yeah, that's the same guy. I want to say Mike Flanagan. He did a house on the haunted house on or Hill House or something like that. I watched that one with my wife. I didn't see the second one he did, the Bly House, but he's got a lot of these. I mean, he's like their in-house horror guy now, right? So he's gonna be printing these things out for the next sequel future, right? So
Yeah.
The haunted house was pretty good, but other than that, I didn't watch the other one. So let me know how it is. But other than that, for me, just on the grind, bro. Just on the grind. I mean, it's always good to do these podcasts to think about something different as I get back into the
grind. Hell yeah.
So I appreciate it. So not traveling too much this week, but next week I'll be heading out. Third week of October, but just talking to angel investors and things like that as I start to accelerate the business side. So, but yeah, everyone, hey, This has been a great episode as always. So please like, subscribe, and comment at Show Versus Business on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Listen to us at Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Want to hear us live? Please check us out at around 9:30 Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific, Wednesdays on IG Live at Mr. Binja. There's ADD Live Set. Take care, Mr. Binja.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to Show Versus Business, your weekly take on pop culture. Please subscribe to this podcast at Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Please like and subscribe to our Instagram page, Show Versus Business, to get exclusive behind-the-scenes tips and upcoming episodes. Talk to you next time.